Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello, and welcome to the TIFO Football Podcast. I'm Joe Devine, and I'm now joined by Alex Stewart.
Hello, Joe.
Hello, Alex. And Seb Stafford-Blaw.
Hello, Joe Devine.
Hi, Seb. We just watched the Italy-Turkey game, 0-3, 3-0, whichever way you'd like to talk about it. There were lots of themes that we pulled out we're going to talk about today. Can Italy go all the way being the main one? But before we get started, there are a few facts that Seb has noted down here in the podcast plan. Mancini, of course, the head coach of Italy, has been in charge since May 2018. Buffon and De Rossi retired after a defeat to Sweden in the World Cup playoff. And so did Chiellini, but he reversed the decision. The last time that they lost the game, though, this is the interesting one, was in September 2018 to Portugal, Seb.
Yeah, an amazing, amazing record. It's also one that's kind of crept up on everybody because you know what it's like during European qualification. It kind of happens in the background. You have teams that sort of slowly accumulate points. The opposition isn't necessarily that high. And over time, a sequence just develops like that. And all of a sudden, you come into a tournament like this, and Italy look like a team that haven't lost in 3 years.
Yeah. And they look like a completely different team to the team that played prior to that, because you've listed here in the loss, there were four survivors. Berardi was on the bench for that game. Immobile, Jorginho, and Donnarumma were the other players who played in that last loss. And since then, the team has had a complete makeover.
Yeah, in personnel, but also style, Joe. I think one of the reasons we were talking before, we were all really looking forward to seeing Italy because they're playing a new style. They're playing a sort of more vertical Tikka Italia is the way it's referred to in Italy. And it's an exciting way of playing the game. But also it's I suppose if you were someone who didn't pay a lot of attention to Italian football, you'd think it's almost kind of an anti-Italian way of playing, which is expressive and dynamic and quick and vertical and actually a lot of fun. Like as an opening tournament game goes, where you usually expect it to be a little bit cagey and for the occasion to get on top of players, everyone to be a little bit fearful, to not want to lose. This was great. It was just expressive and, okay, Italy were a little bit wasteful in the first half, but they were expressive and
well,
it was great.
We'll come to talk about that too, because this team, they won 10 out of 10 in their qualifying tournament. People have been talking about them as going all the way. So, Alex, I'm going to put that to you momentarily, but beforehand, will you tell me a little bit about how they play? Because Seb has described them there as sort of abandoning the Italian style of the past. I know this happened some time ago, being very dramatic, but they do strike me as a bit of a different Italy team, not the one that me as a sort of layman is used to.
Yeah, so for a long time, Italy were associated with three at the back. And so playing a four at the back is an immediate and obvious departure from that. Obviously, the way they build up from deep with one of the fullbacks, usually Firenze on the right-hand side, holding back a little bit, allowing Spinazzola on the left to push forward, does create something of a back three. But it's not. It's a back four that adapts in deep build-up but will fall back to make a flatter four in defence.
Ahead of that, quite modern.
It is quite modern. I mean, this is, you know, with international football, you'll see teams, particularly I think teams that play a 4-3-3, that do a lot of very similar things. So you'll often have one quite sitting midfielder. In this instance, it's Jorginho. He's there to kind of conduct spray passes around from a deeper position. One of the players, and in this instance, it was Locatelli to his left, will also be able to drop into more of a six role, but can push forwards, and then you'll have a much more advanced player on the other side, Nicola Barella in this case. And they're sort of trying to create this opportunity for the midfielders to get between the lines. And when Seb's referring to this increased verticality. That's what Italy will do. Rather than just kind of soak up pressure and try to hit skillful players long, they will look to progress the ball through the lines. When they get probably to sort of just beyond halfway line, that's when they look for the width. And there you have, again, quite a modern thing where the fullbacks and the wide attackers will either invert or overlap depending on what the other one is doing. And that's why you get players like Berardi, for example, or Insigne cutting inside and trying to shoot, but also
over and over again.
But also you would see Spinazzola, the left back, cropping up in quite an inside position in the left half space, because the Insigne in that instance has maintained the width on the left hand side. So a lot of what Italy are doing now is what good club sides who play a 4-3-3 do, and because they have technically proficient, quick players, they are able to do this.
Let me ask you this then, because we talk sometimes about international football being a little bit more pragmatic and defensive, partly as a result of how much time coaches get with players. And sometimes you find, maybe a little bit like with the England team in 2018, had so many Spurs players who were all used to playing together, all used to playing a certain style of football, that in some ways that helped Gareth Southgate to adopt that a bit. Is there a particular reason that the Sicily team can play in a way that I might not associate with international football so much?
Well, so for example, Locatelli and Berardi played together at Sassuolo, and there De Zerbi did institute a style of play that's very, very similar to aspects of what Italy do. I think pressing has increased in the Italian game. They don't press as much as, for example, Bundesliga sides or Premier League sides, but it is more of a thing than it was, say, even 5 years ago, because coaching has proliferated and the ideas, the techniques that coaches employ, particularly top-level coaches, they're constantly looking to borrow from other people that they come across in the Champions League that are doing interesting and good things. And this is one of those instances. I mean, I guess, you know, certain facets of football, the idea of trying to exploit space between the lines, create overloads in wide areas, have, you know, players occupying different positions. A lot of this has been taken from sort of the way that Pep has developed positional play, for example. And these players, I think, I mean, this isn't just Italian players, but you'll see a lot of, you know, Spain will do similar things, England will do similar things. They are just more aware of this as a kind of preponderant style of football among big European sides. And so
it's just normal now.
It's more normal. I mean, yes, you will have players like Barella, for example, who played under Conte at Inter, who used a three at the back, obviously, as Conte does. But even there, he does play in that sort of advancing eight, almost a 10 role. So it's an easier transition for him. Even if what's going on around him is a little bit different, then that particular role kind of suits him.
Okay. So let's talk about this game specifically for a moment, because at half time you told me that Italy had 14 shots and Turkey had zero shots. That felt... I could see that... Sorry, it's quite funny. I could see that they were dominating the game. I mean, the way that... We talked about this a little bit. My point was destroyed by the end of the game because Insigne scored a wonderful outside of the post to the far post shot, which is exactly what it looked like they tried to do 14 or 15 times and hadn't quite been successful at. But we were talking about this idea that perhaps this is something we might see during the group stages a bit in this tournament, is where one team, at least if there is a dominant team within a group, you might have these games where one team is extremely dominant and another is extremely defensive for obvious reasons.
Yeah, I think so. I also think it's one of the tendencies that you see in first games. People don't want to lose, Joe. Like, people want to make sure that even if you come out of the first game having given quite a negative performance, you're still in a kind of a fairly neutral position within the group. So at half time, like, beyond the shots, I looked up the respective heat maps of the two teams, and Italy's looked like, you know what sort of the outline of Pac-Man looks like, with a sort of the jaws, and it was right around the sort of the edge of the Turkish centre penalty box, and it was as if, right, we're just going to lock up that central area, and we're going to cede the flanks to you, play these wide ball, play out to the flanks, play balls into the box towards our strength, which is big physical centre halves, and if you're good enough to cut through us with this kind of precise football in the penalty box, then you'll beat us, and that's exactly what happened.
Yeah,
and it felt like I don't know, I think we'll probably come onto it later, but it felt as if that if Turkey had asked a few more questions and been a little bit bolder, this is a team, remember, this is a team that beat, you know, Holland not so long ago, scored four times against Holland, caused problems. And actually, like I know a 3-0 scoreline doesn't really support this, but we had a few moments, particularly in the, there was that counter-attack in the first half, which Yilmaz kind of broke away down the flank behind one of the fullbacks, Florenzi had been caught upfield. And you thought, with a little bit more support, with an extra one or two runners in that position, you could hurt this team. And actually, I wanted to ask Alex about this, because Chiellini and Bonucci, great centre-backs. You look around the rest of the tournament and you look specifically at, I suppose, all roads really lead to France at Euro 2020, and Mbappe up front and pace, basically. And I'd say Portugal haven't quite got as much direct pace, but they've got those direct players that if they get at centre-halves in that mould, it's a problem. I wonder if there's an argument for, I don't know, dropping into a back three at some point, creating a little bit more stability so that you haven't got two players who are at the veteran stage of their career exposed to that kind of dynamism. Because that doesn't feel, if Burak Yilmaz, much as we love him on the T5 podcast, if he's making you look uncomfortable, imagine what else lurks in the rest of the tournament. That's a worry for me.
Well, I think more the point there, if he's making you uncomfortable in that way,
yeah.
Because if he's, you know, backing into you and contesting aerial balls,
he's
going to
make
stuff,
anyone uncomfortable.
Exactly. Yeah, but yeah. No, I think you're right. I mean, so Italy did this a number of times themselves quite successfully. The ball that comes back inside from an overlapping left back hits a player in a sort of fairly advanced left half space position, who then hits a ball back inside for a player to run onto and kind of creates a sort of shape of, I'm trying to remember, this is a podcast rather than just,
you're not going to use my Pac-Man analogy.
Sure, yeah. But, you know, in preparation for this tournament, I've watched a lot of international teams play football, and a lot of them concede goals in that space, in that channel between what is there, either outside right centre-back of two or three and a wide right player. And I think, you know, one of the ways to counter this is to play three at the back, because in that sense, you're able to push one player across a little bit more.
Yeah.
But I do think it also comes from the fact that when teams are transitioning quickly from defense into attack, opposition back lines are spreading, because whether they've got two or three central defenders, the fullbacks are always pushing up at least sort of 35, 40 yards. And so the centre-backs naturally split to do that in order to not leave acres of space in behind the full-backs. But what that means is that they're not very close together, but they're also not, you know, right into those spaces. And it does mean that teams can transition there. And it seems like it's a consistent area of weakness for almost every team in the tournament.
It means you have to be really good in possession, right? Because if you turn the ball over or anywhere sort of, I guess, anywhere 20 yards beyond the halfway line, and you've got, so tonight, for instance, Spinazzola was super aggressive on the left side.
Yeah.
He was great, by the way. I thought he was fantastic.
Nearly scored that goal.
Mm. But any mistake in that situation, and all of a sudden, you are playing a very different game against a lot of teams, like you say, who have kind of adapted to having a three at the top of their formation and generally at least one very, very rapid player. It would scare me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think this is why you have teams where there is quite a conservative holding midfielder who maybe, Declan Rice is a good example here. For West Ham, he's more progressive, right?
Yeah.
He's more press resistant. He'll carry the ball. He'll look to pass it long. For England, he sits a lot deeper a lot of the time. And one of the reasons for that is his major function is to prevent the opposition from transitioning. Now, unfortunately, what this does is it means that he gets pulled wide quite a lot, and then you can, again, attack at the centre. But I think teams where there is less of that kind of, I mean, let's be honest, right? Jorginho, excellent in possession, excellent long passer of the ball.
Don't trust him without it.
He's not a defensive screen
exactly.
In that same sort of way. And this is why he plays for Chelsea in that midfield double pivot alongside a much more energetic midfielder in someone like Kante or Kovacic. And so you're either asking Locatelli to hold back, or you're asking the fullbacks not to push quite so high, which you can't get Spinazzola not to do.
Which negates the effect of someone like that, though. Exactly. If you're picking him, you want him to do those things.
Right. So you're basically, again, looking at a balance there. But, and this international football is, or any football, is always a balance between attack and defence. And I think sometimes if you're in Italy, for example, one of the bigger teams, Belgium, England, whoever, they will look at keeping possession as being a major way of defending.
That's a really good
point. If you don't have the ball, then you can't do all of these things. And we can push players high and all the rest of it. It doesn't matter unless we turn it over. And then they're going to hope that, you know, low percentage opportunity, someone makes a mistake, someone is at least force wide, there isn't a runner, you know, coming like that Burak Yılmaz break that you talked about. Yeah. You know, if Tufan had been busting a gut to get up to the edge of the box, that might have worked, but no one was doing that.
I think that would be a worry for Italy as well, because the other thing that I would like to talk about based on their performance in this game is that it took them a huge number of chances to score a goal, and actually it was the opposition that scored a goal for them, an own goal in the end. If they are playing against bigger teams, and I mean, we can talk a little bit about the rest of the teams in this group. We've got Wales and Switzerland to come. You feel after beating Turkey 3-0 that Italy are absolute clear favourites to finish top of this group. But as they progress further throughout the tournament, and they do face teams who hold on to the ball a little bit more, sharpness in attack has to be much, you know, is going to be much more important. And presumably, do you get the impression, having watched this team a little bit before, that this was perhaps a nerves issue, that, you know, it's like first game of the tournament, or is this something we've seen from Italy takes them a little bit longer, they're not as sharp an attack?
None of their strikers are particularly clinical in front of goal. You know, yes, they generated a few decent opportunities from set pieces, and because they have Chiellini and Bonucci, that's always going to be a potential option for them. But I do think that Italy will be the kind of team that needs to generate 5-10 chances before they get even a decent shot on goal. You know, that the play that led to Demirel's own goal was good play, but it wasn't necessarily the kind of thing that they were regularly creating as an opportunity otherwise.
It did need a mistake as well. Let's remember, I mean, good move.
Well, it needed the slip, didn't
it? It needed the slip, but, and it's a good percentage ball.
Driving right to the byline and looking for that ball back through the corridor of uncertainty from a very, very deep position. From memory, that was the first, maybe second time that they'd attempted that particular thing, as opposed to the cutting inside and shooting, or trying to generate an opportunity by driving directly towards the heart of the Turkish defence rather than get behind it.
Yeah, it's the first time I can remember them actually getting to the byline in that position, having the time, not just being crowded out by a covering centre-back and probably a full-back covering the cut-back too. That was probably,
And of course, this is one of the reasons why your full-backs overlap, right? Yeah. It's that opportunity to get to the byline and pull that cross back is great, but also, even if they don't get the ball, by doing that or making that run, they're putting the opposition fullback in two minds, or they're dragging the wide midfielder with them, so that your inside forward is then only one-on-one with the fullback. And so that they'll keep doing that. It's about decision making when the ball is in that advanced area. Do you play it to the fullback on the overlap, or do you cut inside and shoot? And Italy did the latter probably one too many times.
Yeah, I suppose the big question is then, can they go all the way, Seb?
I think it's tricky, Joe. I think they're going to have to be flexible. I don't like that defence against the best players in the competition. I also, like Alex has already mentioned it, Jorginho is someone, we're a little bit biased because we've seen Jorginho in a Premier League context, and he exists in this kind of sphere of negativity, doesn't he? Because he came over, he suffered a little bit when Sarri was at Chelsea. He got vilified as kind of as sort of the emblem for a regime that the fans didn't really like. But I still think that if you take that little triangle, Chiellini, Bonucci, Jorginho, I don't know, you match up top rate number nine, some sort of, you know, really decent eights and tens into those areas, I'm still a little bit concerned. And I love watching those fullbacks. We've talked about Spinazzola. I thought he was great. I don't know. maybe aggression and entertainment is going to look like naivety in about 2.5 weeks' time. I don't know. I just think that France is so strong, Portugal are so strong. I don't know.
England are so strong.
But also, I think they need a perfect game. Like you'd say, if you match this Italy team up against France or Portugal, you'd say they probably win 3 out of 10. Because of the players they've got on the pitch. And also because there aren't many players in this Italy team. They're good players. They've got a wonderful unbeaten run. Have any of these players achieved at international level? No, not really. And so you worry about how they're going to be in those kind of games. Like beating Turkey on an opening night in front of your home crowd, it's different. It's different.
Do you know also, watching the game, I don't know how to describe it, but 3-0, sort of, it feels like it flatters them, even though having watched the game, it doesn't flatter them at all. But it still feels like it flatters them. And I can't quite put my finger on why that is. Maybe it was just, as you said, a little bit of sloppiness. And I think we should put ourselves in the position of the players. It's a European Championship. It's been something they've been working for a long time, delayed by a year. Everyone's absolutely knackered after a kind of, you know, a squeezed together domestic season. So I think you saw, like, you know, the commentators were talking about it with the Turkey team about 65 minutes in, players being subbed off, almost crawling to the touchline.
Florenzi made it out of the first half just about.
Yeah.
You know what's interesting though? Let's be fair, because 2018, Italian football's in chaos. There's a really decent generation of players coming through, but nobody really cares about that because the top level is really negative. That playoff against Sweden was a disaster, like the failure to qualify for the World Cup. So to come from where they are, to the run that they've had, and forgetting whether they deserve to win 3-0, 2-0, 4-0, like to produce that as a performance and for us to be talking now about whether they're equipped to go and win the tournament, that's still a really dramatic turn in their cycle. Yeah, and we're like, I don't know, are they any good or not? It feels a little bit harsh. It's just that, I don't know, it's almost like their improvement has happened so quickly and it's been so dramatic that you almost don't trust it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Okay, we'll be back in just a minute.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
We're back. Let's talk about Turkey. Alex, I know we've mentioned Turkey a little bit already, but will you tell me a bit about how they set up? I was disappointed, I'll be honest. I've got two Turkish players in my fantasy team, both two of the three Ilmazes. One of them didn't play. But I thought, when I looked at the team, that's a good team. They've got some Lille players, as you were mentioning. Lots of players whose names I recognise. Soyuncu, of course. Great, he's a great player. Wonderful haircut, you know. I was disappointed. I was expecting more from them. And now I remember that they're in the same group as Switzerland and Wales. It's actually not that straightforward, is it?
No, it's tricky. Turkey are quite an interesting team tactically. So they sort of have they do this thing where the centre backs will split wide. The goalkeeper, who I think was exceptional this season, by the way.
Outstanding. He was great.
Really, I mean, in terms of decision making, a couple of the saves, but also that low flat kicking to penetrate the first line or two of the Italian defence, I thought was really, really impressive. But so the fullbacks will push up a little bit. Yokoslu sits in and creates a kind of diamond with the centre back so that they can rotate the ball. But then ahead of that, it gets very messy. So Ilmaz is there to act as a focal point, but also to run the channels. Behind that, you've effectively got players who, for their club sides, play a variety of different positions. And really, apart from Tufan, who is an orthodox number eight, all of those other players in Turkey's lineup have played in wide positions, have played as tens, have played as strikers or second strikers. And what I found with Turkey today was that in the rare occasions where they did have the ball, and let's be honest, they had almost no sustained possession. So even then, it becomes quite difficult to analyze them because you can't see what they're doing if they don't have the ball. But they clustered way too much in the middle for me. I don't think the fullbacks were pushing high enough to get the width. I think Çalhanoğlu's natural inclination is to drift inside and look for the ball and act as the creative hub, which is why he plays very much as a kind of an inside player or an eight for Milan. But you stick him on the wing, he's going to come inside, but he's going to come inside quite deep because he's a through ball player. He's a long passer. He's not the sort of person who's going to dribble it forwards. You end up basically with just a... And this is why they brought Underon in the second half, because they needed somebody, anybody, to try and maintain the width, at least to attack one of these fullbacks. If Italy's fullbacks are pushing high all the time and you don't have a winger who's looking to get in behind them, then that's kind of an error. But it's because Turkey's best and most creative players are not natural wide players.
Well, I was going to ask you specifically about Çalhanoğlu, because he's been linked to various Premier League teams.
Available on a free transfer now.
Is he available? Well, this summer is available on a free transfer.
Yep.
Goodness gracious me. It's AC Milan right now, isn't he?
He is indeed, yeah.
And he's a player that, you know, people are excited about. I remember reading James Horncastle's Italy preview before, and he sort of pointed him out as, you know, needing to prove that he's worth that move now, because this will be his big opportunity, yep. right? Yep. At his age. But you're right, we didn't really get to see much of him, did we? No. And that was a little disappointing.
It's a real shame. So he's not a massive goal threat, although from direct from set pieces, he can be really, really good. He will occasionally whack in the absolute pearler from sort of 35 yards, one touch, half volley. But as a creative player, he is excellent. He would definitely thrive in a team that doesn't require a huge amount of pressing. He's not a particularly dynamic defender, but if you want somebody who can sit in either as a 10 or, I suppose, someone, I don't know, he's a little bit like a Ziyech, for example, who can sit in that space tucked ever so slightly inside from a wide area and do interesting and creative things with the ball, but you're not going to rely on him in a high-pressing team. He wouldn't work at Liverpool, for example, I don't think.
Hakim and Hakan.
Sure.
I'd watch that. I'd listen to that podcast.
It's annoying though, because we talked about Turkey probably 3 months, 4 months ago on the podcast, and we said they're going to concede goals, but they could be fun going forward. And I feel a little bit shortchanged, because I think that we spent time watching Lille this season and we've enjoyed watching Yılmaz, but Çalhanoğlu to me is someone you need to play in this Turkish team. You need to play closer to Yılmaz, because that's how you bring him into the game. And also Tufan had. Tufan, for me, I know he's an eight, but Tufan for me is at his best when he has a shooting opportunity. You got to put him in position to be a goal threat. And so I would have played Oke as at the base of a centre midfield, Tufan next to him, and then build a little bit of a three out of Çalhanoğlu and Yılmaz and probably someone like Ünder just for the pace, because I think Turkey are going to have to play a little bit on the counter-attack, but play to your strengths.
Here's a question.
Play to your strengths.
Would you say that directly to the face of Chanel Ganesh?
I would not. No. I would be afraid.
He looks like a man with authority.
He looks like a man that would hit me for saying that to his face. So we shall note. It's difficult, because when you have a situation in a tournament where a third place team can go through as you know, for being a best runner up or one of the best runners up, then the temptation is to be conservative and to be negative and to kind of curl up into a ball and say, please don't hurt me too much on opening night, because if you do, you're going to destroy my confidence. I get it. But also dance with the one that brung you, because you can, Turkey have the tools to damage teams. And I think I still hope to see that against Wales and Switzerland. I think they'll beat Wales. But it just feels like a little bit of a missed opportunity, and it's sad that they've progressed and now they've created this big negative on opening night. It's just unfortunate.
Well, after this result now, is there a part of you that thinks they'll have third place progression in the back of their mind? Because Wales and Switzerland are not easy games, right?
They're not easy games, and I think this kind of forces their hand. You could see three times in your first game, you're on the back foot immediately, and you have to come out of your shell. I wonder whether Wales, to me, I think Wales-Turkey is going to be really interesting because Switzerland are not going to be an open team. They're a little bit more...
We might see more of Turkey's attacking flair exactly against that. Switzerland, right?
Yeah.
Well, I think that would be fun. I think I'll have to.
I suspect, and we were talking about this a little bit before, I suspect that Wales will actually cause Turkey more problems than Switzerland will.
Yeah, you were saying this.
Because this the use of the false nine that Wales have been doing, rather than having just Kiefer Moore up front as a target man, they've been trying to play a little more through the lines. And these quick movements, and then you've got, you know, obviously someone like Gareth Bale making those surging runs in field. It seemed like that space was the space that Turkey found hardest to defend, which is odd because they've got...
That's their strength.
Progressive, bulky centre-backs who will push forward. I mean, Soyuncu's biggest single weakness as a defender is he sells himself by going too quickly out. So I'm not quite sure why that happened, but...
To me, he's someone that got spooked at some point. When he first established himself at Leicester, he was a really excellent player. Like on the ball, without the ball, did everything really well. It seems to me as if there's something that there's been like a it's like a trauma that's occurred in his playing personality, and it's kind of created this slight rashness. There's like a first and second act.
No, he was rash before he moved to Leicester. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's the kind of centre back who, when he sees the ball coming through the air and the opposition player is going to have it is 10 yards in front of him, he still wants to try and make
he'll Aliquia Mangala.
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes he'll go past. Yeah, he'll overshoot. Yeah. And so he has this tendency. I think, you know, Switzerland will be more dynamic, more physical, but will also probably give Turkey the lion's share of, well, not lion's share of possession, but a decent chunk of possession that will allow them to start stringing some passes together. I think Wales could be very tricky on the counter for Turkey.
That's interesting. I worry a little bit about Switzerland's ability to score goals because Haris Seferovic is still starting on top of their formation.
How often do you worry about that, honestly?
I mean, it doesn't keep me awake at night worried, but it's
time
kind
he's
of
mentioned it today.
I mean, it's been a little bit of a concern. I brought it up a few times, and I kind of bully Haris Seferovic every time there's an international tournament. I just don't understand how he. Anyway, yeah, I feel like if I go further down that road, it's going to end with.
Remember that we're live.
Yeah, but
we can't cut out the things that you say.
No, but I was going to say, like, if I go further down that road, he's going to end up making me look silly at some point. So you know,
Fingers crossed.
I think. Him playing as a single centre forward against those Turkish defenders, I'd like Turkey against them. I think.
Listen, let's not blow our Swiss wad. We've got them to come. We'll talk about that tomorrow.
Fine.
I'm curious to know, after almost no information and only one game, what you now think the outcome of Group A will look like. I mean, I assume we would all agree wholeheartedly that Italy will finish top of the group without any huge struggles. I mean, I remember you saying that you thought that Wales might cause them problems. Because of how high defensive line is,
I think any team can cause Italy problems. I think Italy's problem.
Full stop. Okay.
No, Italy's problem is going to be a problem that any team can exploit.
Yeah,
and that is the combination of two slow centre backs. Admittedly, great readers of the ball, you know, intelligent footballers, but they're still slow. Protected by a defensive midfielder who's not very defensive, with fullbacks who by and large want to play basically in the opposition penalty area. And it doesn't matter if you're Switzerland or Wales or any of the teams that Italy will meet further down the line, that is an exploitable situation. Certain teams will do it better. If a team has a Kylian Mbappe in it, for example,
sure.
Then it's going to be fine.
They have all the best players.
Fastest players.
Oh, okay.
I wonder if Wales push Bale into more of a nine in that, because he's not the player that, obviously, because he's much older, he's not the player that destroyed Maicon down the left-hand side. He's not a player that's going to bounce like a metronome up and down a wing. He's a goal scorer now. He's a centre-forward. He's still quick. But if you put him up against aging centre-halves, he still looks very quick.
Well, I mean, the big question here then is who finishes second in this group?
It should still be Turkey.
I still think Turkey, yeah.
But don't rule out Wales pulling off a slightly shock result against someone.
You have to venture a prediction too.
Oh, I think Wales will finish second.
Really? Bold.
I mean, I, it's difficult to demur from that, because the other thing I do like about Wales is that if the kind of Wilson, Bale, James, very rapid, lots of passes, lots of David pace. Brooks as well, mm-hmm. if that approach doesn't work, then they can bring on a proper lump of a target man.
Yeah.
And bang the ball into them with quick runners off. So,
and they've got Gareth Bale and Aaron Ramsey, right?
As we talked about outside, that Wales's problem is that they have a slightly porous back line where none of the players are really, you know, established starters at top level teams.
Sure.
So they're going to have to hope that they hold out. But on the counter attack, Wales have scored some absolutely sublime goals recently.
Can I say as well, I might be totally misremembering this, but wasn't one of the surprising things about 2016 that Wales defended really, really well and didn't concede many goals?
Yes, but they...
With a defence full of players who weren't top-level defenders.
But with a back five
yeah.
where they could basically ping it long to Hal Robson-Kanu and hope that someone would run
yeah.
off them.
You okay. also had, I suppose...
So it's a different style of football now.
Mm.
Bale, at, you know, 26, 27, genuinely a world-class player at the top of his form. I mean, let me ask you, though, if you got Wales finishing second, who are they beating to get there?
The other teams that finished third and fourth.
You're not going to expand on that. That's just...
No. Okay. No, I would expand. My expectation was that Turkey would finish second
yeah.
before I watched Turkey this evening. And I will return to my point. Italy absolutely deserved to win the game. I still think...
3-0 was too much.
3-0 was a bit too much, but... Turkey, as you know, as we've discussed during this podcast, they just didn't really seem to have any kind of solution to it, and that surprised me. And I feel like another team with a bit more gusto. Yeah. I don't know. That's the wrong. You know, it's like all the wrong words. But I would be surprised to see Italy do the same thing to Switzerland or the same thing to Wales, and that means something to me.
What was the statistic that we heard, which was that was the first time that Italy have won a game by more than two goals in a...
It's the first time they've scored more than two goals in a European Championship game
ever. Me, that's absolutely insane.
It is insane.
That might be part of why...
And it should have been six.
Yeah, yeah.
It should have been six, and that's why I'm disappointed.
14 shots to nothing at halftime? Yes, it should have been six.
We've been talking about this for a long time. I think we started with that statistic.
But that's nice, and, you know, that's...
Sure.
No, good symmetry.
We'll be back in a moment.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
We're back. I want to know, Seb... This is the first game of the European Championships. We've been building up to this for some time, professionally, yeah. personally. You know, it's been exciting. When you sat down to watch the game, did you feel all the jubilation?
Even before I sat down to watch the game, as you know, because you've been around me for the last few hours, I had an unusual amount of energy. I'm usually quite a sluggish person.
It's because there's cupcakes in the office.
But even before the cupcakes, there's a football that we found that you had to tell me not to kick around the office.
Mm.
You know what it is? It's the tournament, yes. The return of fans just brings a little bit of tension.
You've got the fever.
Of course, because I came to the office this morning and I arrived ludicrously early. And I was just walking cliche. I broke open the wall chart. I tried to find some blue tack to put it up. I found a football somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, it brings it out of me. International football tournament. What's not to like?
I want to speak for the people who aren't feeling that though. I remember now, like at every major tournament, it's always like either the first Saturday where there's three games or a random like Tuesday into the first sort of full week. Where I go, oh, this is actually amazing. But I'm a slow starter with it.
This evening, it took 14 minutes for you to tell us that you, in fact, you were bored.
Yeah.
Did that change over the remaining 76 minutes? Did you get into it once a few goals started going in?
No one grabbed me. Neither of the teams grabbed me. I think I need to be grabbed and wrestled to the floor, you know?
What's going
to
take that? Do you mean like the emergence of a favourite?
I just, every time I think about an international tournament, I think about Van Persie's header against Spain.
Yeah. And I think that was a moment.
That was day two, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That was like really early in the tournament. So their first game, and I was in the pub watching that, and the sun was coming in through the open summer doors of the old Red Lion Theatre, where Seb Stafford-Bloor is staying during the tournament, by the way. You should visit the old Red Lion Theatre in Angel. It's Uncle Damien's pub. It's Uncle Damien's pub. And I can guarantee you it is one of the best places to watch football in London, and it's booked for a lot of days.
It's insanely popular. So if you want to go, you're going to get out of
But there's spots. You should check it out. If you live anywhere near Angel, do call the old Red Lion Theatre in Angel Islington and make a booking. Uncle Damien has kindly allowed Seb to stay there free of charge throughout the tournament. So please go and pay your respects to Uncle Damien. But I was watching that in the sun with my old friend Dean Buckley. And when that goal went in, I don't support the Netherlands. And, but I was just thought like I was totally grabbed by it. And then I was in for the tournament. And that's all it took. And I think I'm just waiting for that. Might be game two, might be game seven. I'm just waiting for that special moment.
How invested are you in England in this tournament?
Very invested. So maybe it'll be Sunday.
Do you think it might be Sunday when we actually feel some tension for the occasion?
Yeah, I feel excited now you've said that.
There we go, there it is. You've got a big smile. Look at his face.
It's just patriotism.
Yes.
Okay, how did you feel, Alex?
About what?
Just thinking there was only one game to talk about, so now I'm just asking
Alex
you how you feel.
Alex expressed some anger. Like when the first Italian goal went in, he was a little bit invested in the Turkish cause.
I was a bit uncomfortable about how he was stalking the room.
I tell you what I'll do is, when we finish recording, I'm going to put a photo of Alex from the first half out on social media. He's into it. He's into it. Pencil behind the ear, arms crossed, right up against the TV. I don't think I've watched a lot of football with you before. And this was a kind of an emergence of a different, you know.
Yeah, I was disappointed that you insisted in having commentary on.
I know, you expressed your disappointment.
But I was annoyed. I was annoyed by that goal because I thought it was silly and it was a bad mistake.
All the defensive effort.
Right,
it was a
exactly.
Waste.
I have a certain affection for Turkey. On no basis at all, really. Perhaps having watched quite a lot of Lille.
Yeah.
But really beyond that, none. And I just thought, I don't know, I get what Joe's saying, that sometimes when you watch a lot of football of this ilk, obviously when England are playing, or Scotland if you're Scottish, Wales if you're Welsh, whatever, you're going to be invested, right? It's going to be exciting. When you watch games where you have no dog in the fight, you want moments, you want a bit of skill, a bit of
controversy,
trickery.
Maybe
would be fine.
Cheating,
violence,
perhaps.
Never an issue with that.
I want to dance with somebody,
right?
I want to feel the heat with somebody.
And all Italy gave you
somebody
was
who loves me. You can't tee me up like that. I can't carry on.
Absolutely fine with ignoring that.
Yeah.
Italy just gave lots of pretty patterns, and the patterns were there and they were obvious. Yeah. But there was no oomph. There was nothing to get. There was nothing to get your teeth into.
I want to grasp onto some oomph. That's all I'm saying. Here's a nice comment from Ash, by the way, who's watching the live stream. Hi, Ash. Ash says, on a serious point, I think Italy played well, but I think Turkey played unusually timidly for the first period of the second half, and it gave Italy the advantage. Defo think that Mancini's use of mid-table Italian league clubs will help in terms of formation alignment and general camaraderie.
Hey, that's a great point about Turkey being timid, because when...
Turkey?
Well, within a few minutes of Under coming on, he intercepted the ball, broke up the field, and you thought, right, Someone support him. And he showed a little bit of a weakness. And the chance didn't result in a particularly good shooting opportunity because there was no one in support. Yeah. But you felt like that could be the spark for a little bit of momentum. Like, you've unearthed the weakness.
Yeah.
Point yourself at it. You know, dedicate some resources to exposing it a little bit more. And it didn't happen. You just thought, there's your opening. There's your prompt. And I don't know, I just added to this. We've talked about frustration a few times. That was another instance for me. That was annoying.
Well, here's another one from Pat O, who thinks that Insignia is the weak link. When he has a decision to make, he usually makes the wrong one. What do you think about that, Alex? Maybe not quite so harshly, but there's, I mean, after watching this evening's game, I think there were lots of poor decisions made.
Yeah, I think if you're Mancini, one of the areas that you're definitely going to look at to improve is the don't always necessarily feel you have to shoot.
Yeah.
That if you've got aggressive fullbacks that are making good runs outside, then by all means use them. And I think that would probably aid Italy's cause in attacking quite significantly.
It's hard though for him because he's had such a good season. I think this season was Insigne's most prolific Serie A year.
Yeah.
Of his career.
It's knuckle down. Do what you're told.
Hard to come out of a season like that. And, you know, if you've been so successful in front of goal, in not a great Napoli team, let's be fair, you kind of, I don't know, I like him. I enjoy watching him. But then I suppose if he played for a team I supported, he might frustrate me a little bit.
You know who I liked?
Tell me.
I forgot to say I like Locatelli.
Yeah.
I thought you did. The best moment of the first half, we talked about this, mm-hmm. was it Insigne or Berardi who had the shot? I can't remember. It was Insigne, but it was a 1-2 with Insigne and Locatelli. Yeah. And we were talking about it because the local camera crew didn't show us the best bit of the move in the replay. They just kept showing us a rubbish shot.
We were all peering around the TV about 6 inches away from it, yeah. Trying to work out who
Seb
the
ran
move.
Over to the telly to get closer to see what number he was wearing. It was number 5. I think it was Locatelli. And I like, this is going to sound weird, I like how tall he is. I like him in those positions. He's strong. He turns the ball really well. He links the attack very well in that little left half space. I'd like to see more of him. Maybe he grabbed me a little bit, Alex.
See, I personally think if Italy had either a much more destructive central midfielder of a kind of, you know, imagine someone like an Italian Konrad Leimer, right? Then you have Locatelli as your deep-lying playmaker. And I think Italy immediately have a more balanced and more solid midfield. Because I agree, Locatelli has a lovely, lovely range of passing. Also a bit of a goal threat if he gets up, but he has that physical presence that means he can just be a bit more of an anchor.
No, I was listening along to you.
All right, I was
queuing up a question about Locatelli. Every time someone mentions his name, I wonder why it didn't quite work out for him at AC Milan. That's all.
I don't know. Is the honest answer
because
to that.
He seems to like.
Well, he's thrived at Sassuolo.
He really has
because of the verticality. Because he can drop off and collect the ball and then spray passes forwards. And he is absolutely the creative hub of that team and has all of the responsibility about transitioning the ball from the defence to the attack. It almost exclusively goes through him. Not almost exclusively, but a lot of it goes through him. And I think he's a player who really, at a youngish age, because he's what, 24 maybe?
Still very young. Still very young.
He's thrived on that responsibility and he's played with a coach who, and if you read about De Zerbi, one of the things that his players often say is that he gives you the opportunity to screw up, that he will tell you to do these quite complex things, quite difficult tactical ideas. Go out and try them. And if you mess it up and it goes wrong and we lose, don't worry about it because you're doing the right thing. You just haven't quite got the execution yet. And that's what has seen Locatelli really blossom into one of these fantastic all-round midfielders.
Dovidas V says that was a financial decision on the part of Milan.
Really? That's interesting.
No, it's great having live comments.
Yeah, it's really good for crowdsourcing thanks, information Dovidas, that we don't know.
that's extremely good. Helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
But then they went and got Benacer, so.
Who's a lovely player.
Yeah.
To me, that's...
That's
not really
Arsenal should have bought. But
well,
whatever.
It's kind of we're kind of veering off a little bit, but that's kind of like that feels like a scouting blind spot on behalf of a lot of different clubs across Europe.
Which, what is?
Well, just not finding a player like that, and not you know if you look at the kind of the clubs.
It was incredibly obvious based on his
numbers. Yeah, but look at the amount of clubs that passed on him. Look at some of those clubs and look at the vacancies they have in that position.
Oh,
that's really interesting.
Yeah, but then Milan have got a really smart transfer team.
They do now,
yeah.
After a very long time, yes, they do now.
I checked out for a minute. I was reading the comments. You guys carried on talking. The last thing I want to do for today's episode, I'm pumped now. Now I'm pumped.
You've been grabbed by Locatelli. You have.
I was grabbed by Locatelli. I was grabbed by the England chap. I forgot England.
Your face kind of lit up a little bit, and you know you got excited.
Well, I'm just really looking forward to seeing us go out in the quarterfinals. Group A, I can see over here on to my right hand side that there is we've got the wonderful Euro Tifo 2020. What do you call that?
Wall chart. Designed by our very own Alice Devine.
Yeah, designed by Sister Alice. She's not a nun. She is my sister. What are the next two games, that they play? Who does Turkey play next, Alex?
Turkey play Wales on the 15th. That's exciting. And then they play Switzerland on the 20th.
Okay. That's good to know. Well, we'll come back to talk about those closer to the time. But tomorrow's three games, I would like to hear predictions from you both, and we'll make sure to get JJ's before the game starts tomorrow, because during the 2018 World Cup, I personally had quite a lot of fun doing this with a different point system for predictions for the next day, because I won and Alex lost, and every time we do, just to remind you again, Alex, I did beat you in the fantasy football by 200 points. He's not paying attention to me now.
You also beat me, so I'm actually with Alex.
No, I mean, I was paying attention. Just saying,
some people like to keep their football knowledge locked away, deep down, only for the sake of competition.
When you
all I need to hear from you,
yeah,
is there's three fixtures tomorrow.
Yes,
and I would like predictions for you from those fixtures, please.
Predictions with scores or just
with scores.
Winners.
I want scores.
You want
please.
Scores.
I want scores.
I think Switzerland beat Wales 2-0. Yeah.
I
think Denmark give Finland a little bit of a thumping. I think that's 3-0. And you know what? And I'm gonna introduce a sub point to this.
Don't hit the table.
Because that interferes with the sound. You have told me that.
What have I told you?
You have told me that quite a few times. Yeah. I think Belgium-Russia is finishing as a 1-1 draw. I think
it's full of hot takes, isn't it?
I think Russia are better than people think they are. I think Belgium have a few more weaknesses. I think Belgium carry like a pretty big punch into the tournament.
I think he's offended the Finns and he's come up with two
alienating
crazy results.
All different. Yeah, but I got to be bold. Like, I'd be...
No, you don't. You want to take your slow and steady wins the race.
You've introduced a prediction game and you've asked for my predictions before you've told me how it's being judged, how it's being scored, how points are awarded.
Judged on the basis of who gets the most
right. Yeah, but
right.
He suggested that there's more than just a kind of 1 point per one correct prediction.
Yeah, because if you get the score right...
Joe will change the rules to
I won't. I won't. There's a coup here. There's a coup here.
And he'll record some kind of jingle about
listen.
It.
Hey, shush up. Stop talking. But thank you for your predictions. Alex, I'd like your predictions, please.
So, obviously, the proviso that football is a luck.
Go.
And so predictions are ultimately pointless. Wales 2-1, Denmark 4-0, Belgium 3-1.
Ooh, no one from Finland is listening or watching this again.
I really like Finland. They're organised.
Why do you hate everyone from Finland? Why?
I even learned bits of Finnish during lockdown. Kilti koira.
Which means
bad dog in Finnish.
Okay.
Or is it good dog?
I hate to know why you know how to say that. Anyway,
it's an early thing on Duolingo.
We need, hit your predictions too.
Can I just say quickly on Russia?
Mm.
Russia, everything revolves around Golovin, Fernandez, and Zuba. And yes, Zuba can cause Belgium's centre-backs problems. But that Russian defensive line is a hot mess. And they can...
Zuba's like a... He's like a character in the Iliad. Like he's like something that you have to defeat on the way home.
So he's a little bit like Kiefer Moore in that he is built like a brick outhouse, but actually his layoff play, his touch is really, really impressive. Yeah, this is not just somebody that you look. The only thing he won't do is press. He kind of chugs around angrily.
But if you told him to press and he said no, he'd be like, oh, fine. Don't worry about
whatever.
It.
But Golovin is worth watching.
Golovin is class.
Yeah. He was the flavor of 2018, I remember.
He was.
Super,
yeah.
It's fun to watch them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what's the
fella? Cheryshev.
No, that's the coach.
That's the coach. Cheryshev.
Cheryshev, who's got that amazing.
Denis Cheryshev.
Yeah.
Funny old career, Denis Cheryshev.
Never played for
Real Madrid, didn't he?
Yeah, he was at Real Madrid originally.
The thing about Denis Cheryshev is he is extraordinarily attractive. Like what? Like a man who you would say minimum 9 out of 10 for physical looks.
I would say that the tournament is grabbing you tomorrow. But sounds of things.
If Cheryshev is playing, I'll be grabbing
him somewhere. Now.
He was extremely attractive. Like just, I mean, symmetrically speaking.
Yeah.
Symmetrically speaking. Right, it's my turn to do predictions, isn't it? What do I say? I say, what were the games?
Oh, Wales-Switzerland.
Wales-Switzerland. Yeah. I think Wales are going to win that game.
Okay.
I think they're going to win that game.
Note how he goes last.
Yeah.
1-0. I'll go first tomorrow.
Okay, all right.
I think they're going to win that game 1-0.
Denmark-Finland, please.
Denmark-Finland. I think it's going to be 1-1.
No.
And I think Temu's going to score a goal.
Right.
Mr. Pookie. Belgium-Russia. I'm going to say Russia will win that game.
Really? Score?
Oh, I regret saying that.
But boxed himself right into a corner.
3-2.
Change your mind.
3-2 to Russia.
I mean, it's...
No. You can't change your mind.
Okay.
It's like when you take your hand off a chess piece. It's done. It's moved. It's over. You know, live with it.
Anyway, this is the end now.
Chess is a real game.
Yeah.
But thanks so much to everyone for watching. I should say to those people listening, I probably didn't make it clear at the beginning, we're live streaming these podcasts on YouTube as well. So there'll be some interaction with the audience. If you'd like to watch us recording these, we start most of them at around 10 p.m. or just after the BSC or just after the last game is finished on the TIFO IRL YouTube channel. So if you could all subscribe to that, that'd be great, because we'd love you to do that, and hopefully we'll get some of you to watch the videos that we'll be making during the days as well. We've got Alex here and JJ, who'll be here over the weekend making some videos with the tactics board, talking about the most interesting themes and teams of the tournament so far. And we'll be back tomorrow and Sunday and Monday and every day until the first break in 14 days' time.
Yeah.
So join us on YouTube at T4IRL, or indeed continue to download the audio of this show after the fact, wherever you download your podcasts. But for now, Alex Stewart, thank you.
Thank you, Joe.
And Seb Stafford-Bloor, wie heet's and gun.
Thank you, Joe Devine.
Yeah. Also, thanks to Don, our live streaming videographer, who you can't see. But he's there. Anyway, back tomorrow, and farewell all.